This is an ABC podcast.
Hi there, Edwina Farley with you. Thanks for joining me and the team for a trip around a big country. This week we're chasing dugong through shark and croc-infested waters to fit them with GPS trackers. We reflect on the end of an era as a regional retailer shuts its doors after more than a century of trade. Head to a celebration reviving the ancient Aboriginal tradition of harvesting spiky bunya cones, and meet a triathlete who's powering on in his 80s and touting the benefits of daily exercise.
Makes you feel good. It's good for the mind. You get out and run, and if you've got any worries, they seem to disperse when you're running. It just goes, and you come back feeling good, you know.
You do indeed. Feeling good into old age, we'll meet an inspiring triathlete who's in training for his next big race at the age of 82. That's coming up, but first let's head to the Gulf of Carpentaria, where rangers are venturing into the water despite the presence of crocs and sharks.
Getting a GPS tracker onto a wild dugong is no easy task.
So we're obviously in the Gulf of Carpentaria. There's crocs, there's sharks, there's jellies, there's all sorts of things here that can be a little menacing.
The Gulf is thought to have the highest concentration of dugongs in the Northern Territory, but current estimates of the marine mammals are believed to be quite inaccurate. To help work out a better way to count dugongs, the NT Department of Environment and Natural Resources has teamed up with NT Parks and Leontawidiara Sea Rangers to fit 10 dugongs with GPS trackers.
Yeah. Yep.
G'day there, I'm Dan Fitzgerald, and I've joined the team as they launch a boat from Bing Bong Port near Borroloola. The first challenge they face is catching the dugongs. The team sends a helicopter with a couple of spotters aboard who search for dugongs in the shallow waters below and then direct a couple of boats towards their target. NT government scientist Rachel Groom is leading the team.
And we chase the dugong, and once the dugong's had a few breaths and we know that it's tired enough, one of the fellas will jump out of the boat with a tail rope, and the tail rope gets attached to the tail end of the dugong, so the dugong stock, tail stock there, and it has a 25 litre buoy at the end of that line, and the dugong basically starts to run and it sort of slowly swims off and it gets tired. It's got the buoy attached to it. Our boat here that we're sitting in is then the boat that follows along that tail rope line, and we try and catch that float as quickly as we can. We bring the dugong alongside, and we have a stretcher here in this boat which the dugong is processed in. So the stretcher goes over, the dugong is alongside us. Our priority is to make sure the dugong is okay first, and then we go very quickly about getting a tag attached. And the tag has got two parts to it. There's a satellite tag, which is, it's quite a big blue looking thing. It's about 2.5 kilos, and that's attached to a 3 meter line that comes off the dugong's tail. And we also have a very small tag, which is about the size of, I don't know, your middle finger, and it's a time depth logger. So once that's attached, we then measure the dugong. We sex the dugong, looking to see if it's male, female, how mature it is, and we also take a DNA sample.
During this whole process, which may take up to 10 minutes, rangers are in the water holding the dugong steady to prevent it thrashing about. They're watched over by someone with a rifle, ready to shoot any crocodiles or sharks that might approach. Sean Evans is one of the Leontawidiara rangers braving the waters.
I'm used to being in the water, but on certain times of the year, usually this type of the year, we've got a lot of jellyfish and crocodile season, breeding season, but yeah, we've had other rangers on the lookout, and yeah, always nervous about crocodiles and sharks in the area, but we trusted the other group, so they kept a good eye on everything.
The data collected by GPS trackers will help make future dugong abundance surveys much more accurate. Rachel Groom says a good understanding of how dugongs use their habitat is crucial.
We'll be able to feed in this information, which will tell us, you know, the dugongs spend most of their time in about 2 metres of water, but we can only see them when they're half a metre below the surface, something like that. So we're probably missing 50% of the NT's dugongs just by doing that survey. So what we will probably find at the end of this, by collecting all this data, that we actually have maybe twice as many dugongs or several factors higher than what we currently have as an estimate. A similar study has been done in the Torres Strait, and they were tens of thousands of dugongs out from their original estimate. So it's really helpful for us to do this study. It gives us a better idea of how big the dugong population is, and also how they're using the habitat of the Gulf of Carpentaria.
The research in the Gulf of Carpentaria is funded by the gas company INPEX as part of its environmental offset agreement with the NT government. That arrangement came under criticism from environmental groups late last year when it was revealed the Department of Environment and Natural Resources seeks approval from INPEX before it releases scientific reports. But for the rangers putting their bodies on the line, the project is well worth the risk.
From my point of view, it's really important to see where the dugong movements, how they travel, how they feed, where they end up. Dugong means a lot to us. It's part of our ceremony, songlines. It's part of people's totem. And it's also a part of our food source for Yanyuwa people. And it's part of the way we live with dugongs by the sea. And we know that, yeah, when there's dugong there, the country is healthy.
I've always been very determined, whatever I do, I always do to the best of my ability, so no matter what it is.
Keith Pearce has raced in triathlons all over the globe and won 6 world titles, including on the Gold Coast and in New Zealand. The most recent was in 2016, when he took out the World Triathlon Age Championships in Mexico.
It's always nice to win. I don't get overexcited about it, but I'd rather win than come second, put it that way. I'd like to win.
Hi, I'm Emma Siossian, and I've come to meet Keith in his hometown of Foster on the New South Wales mid-north coast. The coastal town is an ideal spot for Keith, who enjoys heading out for a run, bike ride or swim every day.
Makes you feel good. It's good for the mind. You get out and run, and if you've got any worries, they seem to disperse when you're running. It just goes, and you come back feeling good, you know. I exercise every day. In the mid-morning, I run one day, swim the next, and bike the next, and I just alternate that every day. In the morning, mid-morning and the afternoon, I go downstairs and I got the gym there, and I do their squats and calf raises, and I've got bungee cords. I use bungee cords a lot for my upper body. So I do that every day.
Keith's wife and biggest supporter, Roberta, says her husband has inspired many younger athletes.
He's a legend. He is a local legend. The boys in the Foster Triathlon Club call him Kahuna, which means big chief.
Keith's triathlon achievements are impressive, but his remarkable story of determination, resilience and personal triumph started many years ago. He was born in England in 1936 and his mum died when he was a baby. At the age of 10, Keith and his twin brother, Frank, were sent to a boarding school in Africa.
I had a twin and an older brother who I didn't really know. But my twin and I, mum died when we were 9 months old. So, and sadly, I never knew her. But a dear old aunt looked after my brother and I, and she was the most lovely lady. And she looked after us until we were 10. And when we were 10, our father came back from the war, and he decided to send us to Rhodesia, which is Zimbabwe now. And so my brother and I, we went to Zimbabwe, and I was at sort of a boarding school there for 8 years. And then I left. It was a wonderful country, wonderful climate after England, you know. And I left, when I left school, I decided I didn't know what to do because we had dyslexia, my brother and I, and we could hardly read when we left school at 16. But I taught myself to read by persevering, reading books, and I ended up teaching for 30 years.
Wow.
in New Zealand, but it was workshop technology which suited me.
Later, in 2010, Keith faced another hurdle when he was diagnosed with cancer and had 3/4 of his stomach removed. Remarkably, he was back training not long after the surgery.
I never actually let it worry me. Psychologically, I thought, well, so be it, you know, they've got to take out some of my stomach, that's it. And it, as soon as they did, I mean, a month later, I was back running.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I've never had any trouble since.
Keith's twin brother, Frank, lives in Sydney, and they've competed together throughout their lives. Their main focus in their earlier years was running, but they've also entered a number of triathlons together, including the World Championships in Mexico. They were both aged 79 and both came home with medals. Keith says they've always driven each other to go faster, although the tables have turned somewhat since their schoolboy days.
He was actually, as a young schoolboy, he always beat me in everything because he was a bit stronger. But since we got older, he never beat me, no, because I was in training more than he has.
Keith suffered a setback last year when he broke a rib in a fall a day after competing in a triathlon. Despite that, he's gearing up for more events this year and says he has no plans to stop training anytime soon.
It's difficult for people who haven't been exercising at my age. But see, I've never stopped. It's about keeping fit. Of course, it makes you feel good. It's good for the mind.
Triathlete Keith Pearce, who at 82 is gearing up for his next event. He was speaking there with Emma Siosian.
Whether it's parenting, caring, you time, or juggling the day-to-day, at Life Matters we know we're all different, and so is what matters to us.
And you see older people in these bright colours and there's flesh showing, embodied and being themselves and having fun, and then we go, I have hope for my future and I want to be that person.
I'm Hilary Harper. Join me and Michael McKenzie for What Matters to You. Life Matters on RN, weekdays at 9 a.m, Saturdays at 3 p.m, or anytime on the ABC Listen app.
You're listening to A Big Country on RN. Still to come, it's the end of an era as Bailey's department store closes down after more than a century of outfitting generations of southern Queenslanders. And we're joining the bunya harvest. The spiky green cones are as big as footballs.
Bunya gatherings have been occurring in this region for thousands of years. We know that sporting activities occurred, that marriages were arranged, law was handed down, all kinds of food was eaten at those traditional bunya gatherings. And people would come from as far as far north Queensland, as far as Victoria, western Queensland, would come for the harvest of the bunya festival. However, in 1897, after colonisation, was the last recorded bunya gathering in Baroon Pocket. The bunya gathering stopped.
Cubby Cubby elder Auntie Beverly Hand is bringing bunya gatherings back, albeit with a modern twist. Hi, I'm Megan Kinnanment, and I'm here with Auntie Beverly on Queensland's Sunshine Coast. She's organised a celebration to mark the harvest of the spiky, oversized bunya cone, a traditional bush food for Aboriginal people. Auntie Beverly says even though the bunya gathering stopped with white settlement, generations of Aboriginal people continued to harvest bunya cones for their nutritious nuts.
Our family, for instance, my immediate family, my husband, my children, we go out every year, gather bunya cones, harvest the nut out of the cones and share it with our family. And we had such good times and it was so much fun. I wanted to share that experience with other people living in the Sunshine Coast region.
So we're in the Arikaria forest. You can tell by all the spiky leaves on the ground. So we're just collecting as many as we can. We've already got a ute load full. Ideally, we'd like 3 ute loads full to make the day complete, but, you know, we'll just do what we can. Nara is the cubby word for hello. Wanya means where, who, or how. So when we say Wanya Yan Yin Man, we're saying, how are you going? Nara. Wanya Yan Yin Man. And Galangor is good.
I am not trying to recreate a traditional Bunya gathering. What I have tried and sought to do with Bunya Dreaming is to uphold those cultural traditions of sharing and caring, of gathering people together, of organising new corroborees and new foods to share with our audience and people who come together. Uphold those traditions, but do it in a contemporary way. So at Bunya Dreaming, what I actually do is I set down 8 challenges. These 8 challenges are meant to emulate the Bunya harvests. So my first challenge is the Bunya gathering challenge, because the first thing that you do is go out and gather the Bunya cones. Then we have a Bunya shucking challenge. That's getting the nut out of the cone. They've got 40% water, 40% complex carbohydrates. They have 11% protein. In traditional times, we may have stored them in the ground or hung them in the air. So the storing challenge is a hole in the ground where people have to toss the cone and get it in into the hole. Bunya Dreaming isn't about how many stalls you have or how many bands are here. Bunya Dreaming's about how much of a good time people had and how many memories they hold. Some young people are brought up with Bunya Dreaming and they look forward to it every year. So our success isn't about numbers, it's about the quality of the experience. Smiles, the amount of connections, new friends that are made, new partnerships that are formed, new projects, dreaming occurs here. What's actually happening is reconciliation. Is we're taking time away to be together. We're taking time away to honour each other, to share with each other. It's something that just happens naturally, which is what it should be like out there. We shouldn't have to develop a policy about reconciliation. It should be something that happens naturally, just what happens here.
Shoppers are looking through the racks of clothing at Bailey's department store for the last time.
Well,
after 115 years of selling clothes to the people of southern Queensland, this family-run business is closing its doors for good. Hi, I'm Nathan Morris. I'm here in the Toowoomba CBD with owner Lex Bailey, the fourth generation of his family to oversee the store.
I've been here since 1973, been on the floor and talking to customers and been in the department. You certainly can't do it sitting in an office and looking at computer printouts. There's a large market outside Toowoomba and the Darling Downs out to Roma, which Toowoomba serves. In fact, we go out to Longreach and up to, we've got customers from Innisfail. If Toowoomba's 140,000, there's also another 300,000 out on the Downs. There's an old saying in Toowoomba that when it rains on the Downs, it rains dollars in Toowoomba, which is still very true. In my time, certainly the late 70s, early 80s, was the CBD in Toowoomba was very vibrant. The council had to put a line down the centre of the footpath to keep the pedestrians flow going, so one side could walk in one direction and the other side the other direction. That certainly isn't the case today. Fashion was all made in Australia at that stage. There's almost none made in Australia now.
Not looking promising, I'm afraid. Oh, there's one, wait a sec. Now it's white.
Store manager Anne Boxall has worked here for nearly 40 years.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
It's going to be very emotional, this closing. It's already been very emotional. And people saying goodbye and thank you very much. See what I mean?
Anne has memories of her time behind the counter here.
So the old yard, brass yard rule is still here. And it's silky oak, as you can see, it's beautiful. And it's got another funny little, under here, the men would be serving, and they'd be standing here and somebody would come in and they'd be smoking behind the counter as they did in those days. And they'd pop their cigarette under here and serve the person. And there's all the burn marks. And how it didn't catch on fire, Lex and I have wondered ever since.
Anne says customer service has always been the priority at Bailey's.
We get a lot of our Brisbane customers say they can't even get anybody to talk to them. And they love coming up here. They said, because you talk to us. And your knowledge of the product you're selling. Big stores, they don't get to know their product really well. And we do, we know what goes with what. We can put a whole outfit together for a person. And I say, look, I would never have thought of putting those colours together. That's fantastic. I missed contact with my customers. I'll miss the people I work with. I miss it all, actually. Getting up, getting dressed, come to work.
Both aged in their 70s, Anne and Lex have seen big changes to retailing in their working lives.
Retail's changed dramatically now with online shopping. Our demographic that we're now catering for is a more mature demographic. It started with the advent of suburban shopping centres. It's a fact of life. It's happening all around the world. There's some major retailers in the USA and the UK who no longer exist. Our major competitors in the 1970s, Pickett's, they were taken over by McDonald and East, and then they folded. I think we've probably held on longer than most other stores. And I think that's because of the way we've, the service and the product that we've given our customers. The corsetry department's always been a big part of our business, and about 80% of our bra sales are done out of the fitting room because the girls are trained bra fitters, which pretty rare these days as well. So people come out of being properly fitted with their underwear saying that they've never been so comfortable in their life. And it's a known fact that about 70% of Australian women are currently wearing the wrong bra size, which makes it very uncomfortable, I'm told. Had one lady in the other day said she was a third generation Bailey shopper, and another one who said she got fitted with the first bra here at 15 and she was now 90. I know what I hope. I hope it leaves as a good warm feeling in people's minds. But it's something that only other people can judge whether she is that or not. That's all your fancies are all finished, so.
She's a long time shopper. Mm. She's been with us all the time I've been here.
Long term.
It's time for Lex to tally the till and close the doors for the last time.
That's the last time for that. End of an era.
How do you feel?
Yeah, quite emotional. But it's good.
Lex Bailey shutting the door on his family's business, Bailey's department store, in Toowoomba for one final time. And that report from Nathan Morris. That's the show for today. More information about all the stories you've heard can be found on our website, abc.net.au/radionational. You can find A Big Country under the Programs tab. Bye for now.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.